need a machine gun. You don't need 30 rounds. Buy a shotgun. Buy a double barrel shotgun.
No, you don't need a flamethrower. And you don't need a tank. And
you don't need an AR-15.
Scare those thugs away. No, and I don't need a grenade launcher. I don't need an F-15. There's just one thing I need to do, and they'll stay away from me.
Buy a shotgun.
Buy a shotgun.
Buy a shotgun,
baby.
You don't need a machine gun.
You don't need a machine gun.
You don't need 30 rounds.
Buy a shotgun.
Buy a double barrel shotgun.
Let's get it started.
Can you dig it?
In here.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Two for a Wednesday on Twin Cities News Talk. John Justice, producer Robbie. We're going to talk with Rob Dorr from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus here in just a moment. For Robbie's rundown in the previous hour, if you missed it, be sure you check out the 6 o'clock hour podcast on the iHeartRadio app once the show is over. We were talking about the Oscars, 2023 Oscar nominations. Brendan Fraser is up for best actor for his character in The Whale. We were both talking about how great it would be if he were to win. Keeping with the theme, I just found out that museums in Britain, this is not a joke, by the way, museums in Britain are going to replace the term mummy. They're now going to refer to what would traditionally be mummies as mummified person to emphasize that they were once living.
Why do they need to clarify that?
Because they want to be politically correct and woke. Because they don't like the connotation for, like the Brendan Fraser franchise, The Mummy.
Sure.
For it to be attached with monsters and things of a supernatural nature. So now it'll be, you know, Brendan Fraser who starred in Mummified Person.
They're going to have to.
Just stop. I'm done. Also in Robbie's rundown, we were talking about Ticketmaster. The monopoly Ticketmaster has over concert ticket, event ticket sales. Amy Klobuchar weighing in on it along with Blumenthal. It is a place where left and right could come together for a solution. It remains to see whether or not that will actually happen.
For tickets to go to Air Supply at Mystic Lake Casino, and it is over $300 a ticket if you want to be on the floor. Absolutely insane.
Air
Something
supply.
Has
I'm
to
a
be
lot
done
of cash.
About Ticketmaster.
Wow.
Air Supply, really?
Johnny and Rob.
Lost in
thank
love.
Thank you so much for that excerpt with Amy Klobuchar saying the word sexy. I almost like just drove off into the ditch. Have a good day.
I mean, honestly, inflation's through the roof. People can't afford things. The oil and gas industry has been destroyed on purpose. And this Amy Klobuchar is out there talking about breaking up Ticketmaster. Have you nothing better to do with your time? I mean, what a useless...
I will say this. They could do more than one thing. You know, there are issues that need to be tackled that are more important than the monopoly of Ticketmaster. That being said, you can cover more than one thing. I can't believe I'm actually giving Amy Klobuchar some credit here. All right, one more thing before we go to Rob Dorr, who's patiently waiting. Robbie, I have an assignment for you, okay? I want you to take a portion of this.
Senator Amy Klobuchar says fans are in a unique position to hold companies like Ticketmaster accountable.
I need to make antitrust sexy again.
Okay, so there's a word in there that I need you to go and attach to.
Are you trying to say that I'm dumb?
Okay, so you need to work on that for me.
You think I am Bill Nye the science guy back here?
You can figure out what I want with that.
I need Beaker to help me.
When you're done compiling all of the stupid things from the DFL that we can put online for people to share as it relates to the Minnesota state legislature. Speaking of which, Rob Dorr from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus. Good morning, sir. Thanks for holding on. I appreciate it. How are you this morning?
Good morning. And Robbie, Godspeed on that production request.
Well, if he doesn't do it, I will. That's just gold. That's gold.
I actually can't do it with you on the phone.
Right, we'll do it later.
So that's going to have to wait.
All right, Rob, let's start here before we dive into the items in Governor Tim Walz's plan, what's happening in the state legislature. I want to get your quick thoughts on Governor Gavin Newsom. Called the Second Amendment a suicide pact in the wake of two mass shootings. Go ahead.
While being surrounded by his armed security guards, off-brand G-men.
Well, he walked them back, too. He was speaking to CBS. He repeated claims that the U.S. is unique among countries of the world because of mass shootings. He also took aim at the high-capacity gun magazines, pushed for more restrictions on them, saying the Second Amendment is becoming a suicide pact, it feels like. Later on, he backpedaled his remarks in the interview, claiming that he does respect lawful gun owners, saying, yeah, I have great respect. I have no ideological opposition with somebody reasonably and responsibly owning firearms and getting background checks and being trained and making sure they're locked so their kid doesn't accidentally shoot themselves or a loved one. Wow, that was a mouthful. So, again, your thoughts on Gavin Newsom.
I fail to see how you could say somebody who the Second Amendment protects an individual's right to keep and bear arms, and to say that that's a suicide pact. There is no walking that back. There's trying to give yourself political cover, but you've already tipped the deck and showed your position.
Well, and California, correct me if I'm wrong, has some of the strictest gun laws in the country, correct?
They are number one rated by every gun control group. They have all of the gun control bills there that every town and Moms Demand Action and Giffords are requesting. They're all there. And they get top marks from all the gun control groups every year.
I thought it was rather telling yesterday, and I don't know if you saw it or not. Did you see the editorial board from the Star Tribune and their search harder to end gun violence? Did you see this piece from yesterday?
I didn't decide to bypass the paywall for that one. but I've seen enough of the Star Tribune's gun-related editorials to have a good feeling of what it says.
Well, this is what I thought was interesting, because they actually made some admissions here. Of course, they took it to the wrong place. But some of the admissions they made in the story was really interesting. They were referencing the shooting that took place in Monterey Park, California, where the individual went to the dance club and 20 minutes later arrived at a second location in Alhambra. They point out that, fortunately, they write, a brave, unarmed employee of the club managed to disarm him, preventing more bloodshed. Then they said this. The gunman was 72, making him one of the oldest mass shooters on record. There no longer seems to be a typical profile of a mass shooter. They can come from any race, ethnicity, or age group and can strike anywhere. And we know that mass shooting definition, you know, is rather broad as they, you know, reference it. They also say no place has proved immune, not churches, schools, grocery stores, parades, or just seniors out for a night of dancing. Now, of course, what they end up diving into and what they end up pointing to, rather than looking at, you know, giving people the ability to protect themselves, is, of course, trying to stop the proliferation of further guns, limiting guns on the streets. I just thought it was a rather interesting admission to their argument that typically they do not acknowledge as they try to frame mass shooters of being of a certain demographic. I just thought it was rather interesting that they're acknowledging what many of us who are on the gun control, on, you know, right to keep and bear arms side of things, typically go and point out.
They're so close to seeing and connecting the dots. So hopefully they get there.
Yeah, they didn't by the end. They ended up offering what they typically do, saying that, you know, the only solution that gun advocates typically have is more guns, and that's not necessarily the case either. The only solution that they seem to have is to get rid of guns altogether. So, however, I will say that the Star Tribune sort of writing in with an editorial now, I know they're dovetailing it off of the shooting that took place in California, but it coincides directly with what Governor Tim Walz is proposing. And, you know, I can't help but make the connection there too. So with that, let's get into what Walz is proposing. Before I go through sort of the list here, what is your biggest concern coming out of Walz's proposals as it relates to the Second Amendment?
There's a few things that that concern us. They've been pushing for red flags and background checks for years. He's added on a few things kind of in conjunction with Mayor Melvin Carter, asking for cities to have the rights to enact firearms restrictions. And that's going to create just this horrendous patchwork of certain guns being legal in certain cities and not others, and carry being legal in certain cities and not others, that we there really needs to be a uniform standard. So I think that's one that might try to sneak under the radar, that people might think is reasonable, that has a lot of unintended consequences.
We have this raising the minimum age for buying military-style firearms to 21 years old. Your thoughts on that, but specifically, before you comment, do we have a definition coming out of Walls or from the DFL or gun control advocates as to what they classify as a military-style firearm?
Yeah, so in Minnesota statutes, there's an actual definition for what's called a semi-automatic military-style assault weapon, or a SAMSA. And basically, it's any semi-automatic rifle that has an adjustable buttstock or a pistol grip, or a detachable magazine, or a foregrip, you know. So, and then it lists out a bunch of models and their facsimiles. So there is a definition in statute, and they're going the wrong way on this. We're actually suing the state in federal court right now for their arbitrary number of 21 for permit to carry applicants. So, you know, our position is, if you're 18, if you're old enough to vote, if you're old enough to, you know, to become a police officer, if you're old enough to go and die for your country, you're old enough to have the right to defend yourself.
We have a couple of talkbacks that I believe have comments and questions for you as well, Rob.
John, ask Rob Dorr this. If they get a magazine ban, it's not going to affect criminals. If they get charged with that in the commission of other crimes, it's going to be plea bargained out. But it makes all us other gun owners, there's nothing to plea bargain on. We're going to get nailed to the wall if you get caught with a high cap mag.
Rob, do you have any comments on that first talk back?
No, I think it's pretty salient. We see over and over again that repeat violent offenders are receiving plea bargains and stayed sentences. And then, you know, when a lawful gun owner uses a firearm in self-defense, they look for every opportunity to try to demonize them. And I think this would be just another opportunity.
Here's another one for you too, Rob.
Morning, guys. A question for Rob Dorr, if it's not too late to get one in. It regards the proposed age restrictions on purchasing quote-unquote military-style assault rifles. What are Rob's thoughts on why they go after a weapon that statistically accounts for zero gun deaths, and they tend to ignore the tens of thousands of people killed every year by handguns and gang nonsense? What's behind this?
Rob?
Yeah, I think, you know, the reason is even among gun owners, there's a certain class of gun owners that don't believe people need those types of rifles. You know, they're fine with handguns and their deer rifles, but, you know, those weird space rifles, you know, nobody really needs those. But Tom, I assume that's Tom in St. Paul, sounds like him. Is right on point there. In Minnesota, we have on average 0 to 3 rifle deaths, period, per year, or homicides, rather. 0 to 3 rifle. And now that includes your target rifles, your deer rifles, and your, you know, your military style ones. And at least for the last several years, the data that I've been able to kind of piece together from that is we've only had 2 in the last 5 years that have been related to, you know, what would be classified as one of these, you know, semi-automatic, the SAMSAs that are classified in under statute. So they're seeking to, you know, add these restrictions to a firearm that is utterly irrelevant when we're talking about violent crime.
Two things before we let you go. First off, your time spent in the, you know, watching the legislature involved in the legislative session. Perception is that the DFL's moving at a very swift pace. Is that Is that true based off of just your time in the legislature?
Yeah, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but I ran some numbers of just on the sheer pace of bills. I've been down there for this is my 12th session now, and it used to be the first month of session you'd get about 100 bills from each chamber, maybe a little bit less from the Senate, 100 from the House, maybe 80 from the Senate. Last few years, it's been closer to between like 200 and 300 in that first 3 weeks, 4 weeks of session. We're 3 weeks into session, and right now the House has over 700 bills that have been introduced, and the Senate has almost 500 bills that have been introduced. And kind of even more shocking than that is when we talk about bills that are on the general register, those are bills in the House that are ready to be voted on and passed off the floor. We've had 12, we have 12 that are on the general register already. This time last year, we had one.
Wow. I know we have, I know we had the blackout bill coming up tomorrow. I know they're looking at driver's license for all come Monday. As it relates to the measures that we're talking about this morning, how does that work out? I know these were attached to Governor Tim Walz's plan, but, I think you know what I'm driving at. As it relates to gun control measures, where do those land within the session?
So it's been a little bit interesting. We've been waiting to I'm just a bill, Schoolhouse Rock. Every bill that gets passed into law in Minnesota has to go through the House and the Senate. The language has to match up perfectly, and then it has to go over to the governor for signature.
Okay.
Right now, we've only had the two red flags and red flag firearm confiscation, gun owner registration. Those have only been introduced in the House. They haven't moved on the Senate. And I've got some theories as to why that might be, just given their thin margins and the pro-gun nature of some of the greater Minnesota districts. Maybe they're not as anxious to take up those issues as the House is. But we are expecting very, very soon hearings in the House Public Safety Committee on the gun control bill. So I would highly, highly encourage everybody who cares about their Second Amendment rights to sign up on our website for our alerts. If you go to gunowners.mn, there's just a spot for your email there. We don't spam it. We don't sell it. We just give you these legislative alerts. We also have our lobby day coming up tomorrow. We'll be at the what's called the vault. It's the basement level of the Capitol building right below the rotunda. And we will actually be lobbying legislators and having legislators swing by. Minority Leader Damoth will be there. Minority Leader Johnson, it'll be a good time.
Rob, I'm going to reach out again. I might try to see if you're available tomorrow so we can give an extra plug to your to the event. I'll talk a little bit more about the legislature because we're out of time this morning. But thank you so much for your time today. I always appreciate it and always great to hear from you, sir.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Representative Tom Emmer joins us next. Twin Cities legislators introduced a bill to block mining facility in northeast Minnesota, while DFLer, who represents that area, is completely absent from the conversation. Plus, what do the Republicans propose in Congress as it relates to taxes? And why am I kind of excited about it? We'll get to that next on Twin Cities. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. We'll run through the takeaways from Governor Tim Walz's 2024-25 budget proposal. It's historic. He wants to raise taxes. Not that you would know that from paying attention to any of the local media, so we'll dive into that coming up again in a few minutes. Right now, though, I'm very pleased to welcome to the show Representative Tom Emmer. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. Good morning, John.
So I'm curious, Representative Tom Emmer, where do you keep your classified documents at?
Well, I don't have any. And by the way, do these guys know what a shredder is, John? Do they have any idea?
I said from the start, Representative Tom Emmer, when the Mar-a-Lago raid happened, and I heard other people mention the same thing, that I'm going to venture a guess. I'm not saying it's not serious, but I'm going to venture a guess that there's a lot of former occupants of the White House, presidents and VPs that have classified documents in their home, and that's turning out to be true. Now, some of these may be more serious in nature than others, but when Mike Pence revealed this yesterday, I was not sitting back all that surprised.
No, and It's although what's really interesting, because we're going to see how this this government that has been weaponized against political adversaries, John, we're going to see how they treat the Republican side of the aisle versus the Democrat side of the aisle. And it's the Biden administration, for all their talk about cooperation, this president is unleashing every piece of the government machine in order to try and thwart our ability to even know what he had in the garage, what he had at Penn University, what he had at the house in Wilmington, I think. It's spilling out all over. And his go back to the time he was in the Senate, John. How do you do that? What are you doing? And then to argue that, well, these were secure. Okay, really? They were next to your prized Corvette, and Hunter was entertaining, apparently, during the... we'll stop there.
It certainly puts added importance on the investigations that may occur within the House. Moving on from that, talking about what's happening here in Minnesota, Twin Cities legislators introduce a bill to block mining facility in northeast Minnesota. Mining of any kind, according to the article here from Alpha News, is already banned in the federally protected BWCA. But the legislation introduced this week would expand that ban to all state-owned land in the Rainy River headwaters, which covers nearly 1.9 million acres in northeastern Minnesota, and that area includes the proposed copper nickel mining facility that Twin Metals has been working to open for more than a decade. Your thoughts on this bill?
Wow, these legislators are either ignorant or they're stupid, or maybe both, John. First off, hard rock mining today is not our grandparents' hard rock mining, and what these people are doing. I suspect Representative Feist and the others that have proposed this foolish policy. And by the way, let's be clear, because there are people listening to your program who are strongly opposed to anybody upsetting the balance in the Boundary Water Canoe area, and I get that. But what they need to understand is nobody is going to allow activity in the BWCA that is going to potentially destroy the BWCA. We have all of these environmental rules and regulations and SARs and everybody else already in place. And what these foolish legislators are ignoring, two things. One, this is the northern Minnesota's way of life. So you live in the Twin Cities and you're going to tell everybody that they got to live with you. In your sad existence? No. I mean, these people love where they live. They deserve to not only survive where they live, but to thrive where they live. And mining is one of the things that allows that. Mining and logging and using the great natural resources that our state has to offer. The other thing that they miss, John, is that these lands, the mining leases up there actually support funding for our public school system in the state of Minnesota. So, they're missing the boat. It's not hard rock mining from the 90s or the 80s. It's hard rock mining for the present. And frankly, it's also part of our national defense. You don't want to be sourcing these minerals from our chief adversary, China. So I think it's pretty foolish, quite frankly. And I hope that people start to recognize it. If nothing else, it'll raise the debate so people can start talking about real facts instead of these emotional Twin Cities legislators' ideology.
One more just quick item of note. I don't expect this is going to pass. However, I was personally pleased to see the Fair Tax Act introduced by Representative Buddy Carter, attempt to simplify the tax code with tax collection system. A 23% national sales tax, a tax established by the bill, would enter into effect by 2025. It would attempt to repeal the 16th Amendment, sunset the national sales tax if the repeal is unsuccessful within a 7-year period. I know that the fair tax was looked at a little over a decade ago, but I don't expect this to get very far, but I was pleased to see this introduced yesterday.
Yeah, well, I mean, if people just think back to last August with the Inflation Expansion Act, which the Democrats called the Inflation Reduction Act, it's just the opposite. Because of funding in that, the IRS is going to conduct an additional 700,000 audits on Americans making less than $75,000 a year, John. Think about that for a second.
And we know the IRS is capable of politically targeted enforcement, and the intent is intent on surveilling, I believe, law-abiding Americans. This is about every mom-and-pop business on Main Street across this country. And by the way, our first vote in the majority, the new Republican majority in the House, was to strip the IRS of these 87,000 new agents. The fair tax, as you point out, it's been around for a while. I'm actually a co-author. It was introduced by Representative Buddy Carter out of Georgia. What it would do is attempt to simplify the tax collection process by eliminating the tax code. It would abolish the IRS and replace it with a 30% national sales tax. The current bill is not just supported by me. It's supported by people like the Freedom Caucus Chair Scott Perry, Representative Jeff Duncan, Bob Good, Thomas Massey out of Kentucky. People need to understand the federal income tax accounts for almost 50% of total revenues. And this week, by the way, marks the start of the 2023 tax filing season. I think the bottom line, John, is just because we have an IRS, we know it's not working. We know that this is a tool that the Democrats are weaponizing against their political adversaries. We got to look at new ways to do business in this country and literally rewrite government as it exists. And I think the fair tax is worthy of the debate.
Yeah, I completely agree. I've been a proponent of the fair tax for years, ever since Neil Bortz's efforts. That former talk show host in the past wrote the book on the subject. Thank you so much for the time, as always. Representative Tom Emmer, great talking with you this morning, sir.
All right, John. Take care.
Coming up. Got a few more suggestions as we have a global doomsday clock. We need our own doomsday clock here in Minnesota. We'll share with you some of those ideas, and we're going to get into it. The takeaways from Governor Tim Walz's 2024-25 budget proposal. And listen, I mentioned at the start of the show, and it's true. The fix is in. Walz has his plan. The DFL and the legislature have their plan. We'll see how closely they align. But the local media is going to peddle the spin and propaganda coming out of the DFL so the most people in the state do not know what's really going on. We're going to get to the bottom of all of it coming up on Twin Cities News 5.
Speaking of the Iron Range mining, not only do the schools get money from the mines, but the cities, the towns up on the Iron Range also get money from the mines. And so the city, the towns suffer with the mines not being able to open.
Yeah, the bill is coming from a woman that wants to put tampons in 9-year-old boys' bathrooms. I mean, do we expect... That's just facts.
How dare you?
Well, I just did. Twin Cities News Talk, John Justice. Producer Robbie in there playing you Greta Thunberg. Mentioned this at the start of the show. The doomsday clock moved closer. Closest ever to midnight. Top scientists, security experts moved the doomsday clock forward yesterday to just 90 seconds to midnight, signaling, an increased risk to humanity's survival due to the DFL trifecta of power in Minnesota and Walz's budget. And nuclear shadow over Ukraine and glowing climate crisis. Speaking of the growing climate crisis, we'll talk with our energy guru, Isaac Orr, be joining me in studio coming up at 8 o'clock this morning. They plan on moving the blackout bill, the Carbon 2040 plan, to the floor tomorrow in the legislature. I'm going to get into Walz's proposal here in just a moment. Been looking for your suggestions on a doomsday clock here just for Minnesota.
Hey, good morning, you guys. So I don't have any thoughts on the doomsday clock. I'm not good with clocks, and I don't need a clock to tell me if it's doomsday, but I have ideas for your bumper music. Metallica Monday, Techno Tuesday, Weird Al Wednesday, Polka Thursday, and Fleetwood Mac Friday. Mm. All right, you guys have a good morning.
I may have to split some of those up like the wife and I do when we order a large pizza. You know, where she gets all the veggies and I get all the meat. I don't know if I could do like an all Fleetwood Mac morning or an all Weird Al morning, but maybe dividing it up a bit.
Well, Friday morning, you can go your own way.
We're still open to suggestions, by the way, for bumper music on Friday's show. We haven't landed on anything yet. So if you want to suggest a theme, it doesn't have to be an artist, but it can be like the talk backer. It can be a theme.
Yeah, it can be like TV themes or movie themes. Or
we'll take those via the talk back, or you can email justice
Jock at... Jams.
iHeartMedia.com. All right, let's get into it and put it in its proper context. Welcome to your never-ending parade of stupid as we have the takeaways from Governor Tim Walz's 2024-25 budget proposal. Rebate checks, some Social Security tax relief, and paying off the U.S. Bank Stadium debt. Yeah, just like all the other news outlets, they ignored the fact that there's tax increases. The version that I have actually comes from the Minnesota Reformer. They did a better job than most of the other outlets, shockingly. So let's run through some of the details, and I want to hear from you. Leave a talkback via the iHeartRadio app, or you can give us a call, 651-989-5855. Governor Tim Walz yesterday proposed a historic budget that gives money to working class and low-income Minnesotans, kind of. I'll be adding my own commentary to much of this, and invest in a range of government programs aimed at improving education, housing, health, and child care. Every story this morning is the same, and they ignore the real truth about Walz's plan. Walz said at the press conference, this is a fair budget that will continue to create growth, reducing taxes on Minnesotans while improving all aspects of their lives. He's a liar. Gonna get fired up here. Get the John's a little triggered ready. He's at the Department of Revenue building in St. Paul saying, I could not be prouder of what we've done. The Walz administration on Tuesday said its budget would create the largest tax cut in Minnesota's history. Kinda. But Walz's proposal is only a first step in the state's budget-making process. After Minnesota Management and Budget releases its latest budget forecast next month, lawmakers will use our projection, those projections, and Walz's budget as starting points to create the state's 2024-25 biennium budget. I mean, this is where it comes into, because Walz is going to have his plan to make himself look good, and then the DFL's got their plan, and we'll see how this whole thing shakes out. Now, he did offer some rebate checks with some very odd stipulations. Walz proposed, first off, historic $65.2 billion budget is about 25% more than the state's current two-year budget. And what they say in the article is an increase in spending amid the $17.6 billion budget surplus. But you can't get there without raising taxes, which all the local media outlets ignored. He's already proposed giving out at least $12 to $15 billion of the surplus he's suggested already. Now, he is proposing sending $2,000 checks to Minnesota families with an income below $150,000, $1,000 checks for single filers making less than $75,000. Checks would be sent out to about 2.5 million Minnesotans. You make $75,000 $1, you're out of luck. If you're married and you make $150,000 $1, you're out of luck. So basically, those who paid in the most to the historic budget surplus get nothing. Zilch. Zero. Not even a penny. Unlike the Walz checks the DFL governor proposed during his election campaign, the cash this year doesn't phase out at higher incomes. It just shuts off altogether. The income threshold, as I mentioned, for qualifying, $150,000 for married filers, $75,000 for an individual, and it's stricter than what he proposed last year. You know, when he was running for office and you wanted stupid people to go and vote for him? That proposal was married filers making under $274,000 and individuals earning less than $165,000. See, he needed the votes then. If he had done what he did here, he risked losing those votes from a vast majority of individuals that wanted to see this money. I don't know if it would have mattered. Democrats in the legislature haven't shown widespread enthusiasm for Walz's rebate checks because they're monsters. They've already proven that with their PRO Act bill. And the governor has yet to make clear how far he's willing to go to finally get his checks into Minnesota's hands. Another large chunk of spending, about $1.1 billion of the biennium budget and another $1.2 billion in the following 2 years, would be used for child tax credits. However, those tax credits would be $1,000 per child for families earning less than $50,000. Families earning less than $50,000 will get the child tax credit with a maximum of $3,000 per family. So you probably won't get a dime of that. Now, the Minnesota Reformer, deep into the article, finally points out to the obvious truth here. Despite the billions in surplus, Walz is still proposing tax increases. His proposal includes an increase in the capital gains tax. That's just one. I'll get to more of them here in a moment. He estimated it would generate $660 million over the next biennium. This tax would primarily affect wealthier Minnesotans who have enough money for investments. He's going to drive the wealthy out of the state and then probably try to do what California is trying to do right now by taxing those wealthy individuals that left California. Why? Because those on the left, like Walls and Governor Gavin Newsom, are also monsters. Walls said, that just makes it fair. You know what's not fair? Having the DFL trifecta. That's what's not fair. That creates revenue, then. That's invested back into the very things that created the wealth in the first place. So $17 billion in surplus. You have an unlimited pool of money. You shouldn't have to raise a dime in taxes. You should be cutting taxes, actually. Told you I was going to get triggered. Although some Democrats, particularly in swing states, have pledged to completely eliminate the state tax on Social Security benefits, a fight is likely. Walz's budget would only reduce the tax on Social Security benefits for about 350,000 households, while wealthier Social Security recipients would keep paying. Boy, they hate people that actually help this state and make money. Oh, Minnesota's also paying off its share of the U.S. Bank Stadium debt. I'm actually kind of okay with that. Republican leaders at a press conference yesterday said they were disappointed, and they should be. Senate Minority Leader Mark Johnson said he wishes the Walls budget included permanent tax cuts rather than one-time checks. Johnson went on to say it'll be our job in the coming months to expose these controversial spending and divisive policies. I'll help so Minnesotans know what they're really getting into with this one extreme Minnesota budget. If you want to comment on this, we got Isaac Orr coming us in studio. We will take your talkbacks and play those back next hour as well if you want to go and comment on this. But let's get into this. Bill Walsh in the Center of the American Experiment laid it out rather succinctly. Governor Walz did the most amazing thing today as he released his state budget. He kept a straight face proposing tax increases on top of the $17.6 billion budget surplus. It will take weeks to sort out all the moving parts, but here's a few quick takes. Walz proposed new wealth tax on capital gains, he predicts, as mentioned, will bring in over $600 million in 2 years because he thinks it's unfair that people have too much wealth. Walz is also proposing a new sales tax for the 7-county metropolitan area to pay his failed management of the Southwest Light Rail boondoggle. Walz proposed the rebate checks for Minnesotans, but only if you make less than $75,000 per year. Walz is also proposing raising vehicle license tab fees by increasing the depreciation schedule. So if you drive a nice car, you're going to pay more in taxes. At a time when we don't have enough law enforcement to actually get individuals on the street right now who have expired tags. We've had numerous stories about that covered. Walz proposed a new paid family leave bill using over $600 million of the surplus, but the benefits to employees will phase out as their income gets higher. Seriously, this budget plan by Walz is just a massive attack on the wealthy in the state. And not even like that wealthy. Well off. Walz's proposed total spending for the next 2 years of the $65.2 billion is almost double what it was just 12 years ago. This budget proposal from Governor Tim Walz is another massive increase in state spending, to be sure. But it's not just about money. With every new state employee, every new program, every new tax, every new giveaway, the state takes a little more of your freedom. The only question is, which will run out first? So here's your Walz budget headline roundup. Because the vast majority of the people out in Minnesota, the public that aren't paying attention, aren't going to know the truth if they just look at the headlines and if they even go and dive into a lot of the details of the story because they don't lay this out. Check out these headlines. Care 11, Walz's final budget plan includes surplus for 2.5 million Minnesota households. Boy, that makes it sound great, doesn't it? Fox 9, Walz restructures rebate checks, says millions of Minnesotans will benefit. All a positive spin. Channel 5, Walz's two-year budget proposal includes checks of up to $2,600 per household. Pioneer Press, Walz budget, tax rebates up to $2,600 plus $11 billion for schools, housing, workforce, and more. And of course, the Star Tribune, Walz proposes checks for 2.5 million Minnesota households. DFL governor rolled out $65 billion budget, including checks and some Social Security tax breaks. None of them mention the fact that he's raising taxes in the midst of a historic surplus. The fix is in. The local media is going to dutifully do everything they can, just like the Star Tribune did with their anti-gun, gun control editorial, just like they did when it came to the PRO Act, simply splashing headlines, this just codifies abortion. People need to speak up, and people need to know more than that, too. I'll get into some ideas that I have moving forward. It'll take time. But we need to get the idea of freedom and liberty out into the public. It needs to be in our journalism. It needs to be in our workplace. You need to talk to your friends and family. Tell them what's really going on. We'll talk more about the legislative session. Isaac Orr, our energy guru from Center of the American Experiment, will join us. They're the ones that basically wrote the book on the high cost of the 100% carbon-free electricity plan by 2040. We'll see where it stands as it heads to floor tomorrow in the legislature next here on Twin Cities News Talk.